Well, our reading this evening is in Genesis. We've been making our way through the chapters in Genesis. We've reached chapter 34. You recall last Sunday evening that Jacob had parted from his brother Esau and had made his way to the promised land, to the land of Canaan. And he'd stopped at the city of Shechem, where he'd raised his tent. And the chapter goes on from that point in the narrative. Reading from verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her and lay with her and humiliated her. And his soul was drawn out to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this girl for my wife." Now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with his livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they had heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry, because he had done an outrageous thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing must not be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us and the land shall be open to you. Dwell and trade in it and get property in it." Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will, and I will give whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife." The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully, because he had defiled their sister Dinah. They said to them, "We cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we agree with you, that you will become as we are by every male among you being circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we will be gone." Their words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son Shechem, and the young man did not delay to do the thing, because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. Now he was the most honored of all his father's house. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of their city and spoke to the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us. Let them dwell in the land and trade in it, for behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men agree to dwell with us, to become one people, when every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised." Will not their livestock, their property, and all their beasts be ours? Only let us agree with them, and they will dwell with us. And all who went out of the gate of this of his city listened to Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. On the third day, when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure and killed all the males. They killed Hamor and his son Shechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because they had defiled their sister. They took their flocks and their herds, their donkeys, and whatever was in the city and in the field, all their wealth, all their little ones and their wives, all that was in the houses, they captured and plundered. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." But they said, "Should he treat our sister like a prostitute?"
Please do have your Bible open at Genesis chapter 34 that was read to us earlier on. We left last week with Jacob settling in Shechem in Canaan. He had earlier vowed to God that he would return to Bethel, but in the end he stopped 20 miles short of that city. 20 miles short, we might say, of full obedience. And we don't know, but perhaps Jacob thought that his compromise was not all that serious. After all, he was still in Canaan, still in the promised land. He had returned as God had told him to. And maybe he thought that at worst, his compromise was only a small sin. Well, if he did think that, then chapter 34 gives ample testimony that there is no such thing as a small sin. For here we read about the devastating consequences of Jacob's sinful compromise. Genesis 34 is one of the ugliest chapters in all of Scripture. It records what we might call a pandemic of evil. A pandemic of evil, and the virus started when Jacob fell just 20 miles short of full obedience. And we read at the beginning of the chapter that Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land, and when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her and lay with her, and humiliated her. Shechem raped Dinah. He saw her. He liked what he saw. And he decided that he had to have her. A bit like, I suppose, when Adam and Eve in the garden saw the fruit, the forbidden fruit, they liked what they saw, and they decided they had to have it. There's an echo of that here in Shechem's actions. He sees, he likes what he sees, and he takes. And as the prince of the land, he's probably used to doing what he wants to do, and with whom he wants to do it, and perhaps he has taken advantage of other women in the past, and he's got away with it. And so he seizes and he humiliates this young woman, maybe only 15 or 16 years old. And one can only imagine the terror that this young woman, Dinah, must have felt. Somewhat surprisingly, though, we then read that having defiled Dinah, Shechem's soul, verse 3, was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her. Surprising, I say, because I'm no psychologist, but I think normally, after a rape, a violation has taken place, the guilty party ends up hating, if he doesn't already, ends up hating the person that he has attacked. That is certainly what happened in a later story involving Amnon and Tamar, which you can read about in 2 Samuel chapter 13. Here, though, Shechem, somewhat surprisingly, loves the young woman. He speaks tenderly to her. Clearly, he is besotted with Dinah. He is infatuated, obsessed with her. He must have her. He cannot stop thinking about her. He's going crazy. And so he says to his father, Hamor, get me this girl for my wife. Get her for me. I must have her. This is not a respectful request, notice. This is an order. Get me this girl for my wife. It's pretty clear, I think, that Shechem is really the one who is in charge of this family, not Hamor, his father. Shechem is used to getting what he wants. If he sees something that he likes, then he'll take it, even if it is a young, defenseless, innocent woman. And so we see here that Shechem is thoroughly evil, and he does thorough evil. He rapes Dinah, a heinous crime. How do Jacob and his sons respond to Shechem's evil? That's what I want to look at in the rest of our time this evening. How do Jacob and his sons respond to this wicked crime that Shechem has committed against Dinah? We see actually that they respond in two quite very different ways. We'll consider first the response of Jacob's sons. We'll look at their response first this evening. And what we see is that it's a response of what I've called merciless revenge. It's a response of merciless revenge. We read in verse 7 that the sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he, Shechem, had done an outrageous thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing must not be done. Jacob's sons were indignant. They were seething with rage. They were very angry, and rightly so. Rightly so. Rape is a wicked sin. Such a thing must not be done in Israel, and nor, for that matter, in any other place. The crime of rape must be punished. And we as Christians, let me just say this, we as Christians should be angry when we hear of or read about a crime like rape, because it is a wicked sin. The initial response then of Jacob's sons is right. But what they then decide to do is wrong. It's sinful. Hamor speaks with them in verse 8. He says, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him to be his wife. Now, interestingly here, and you might see this in a footnote in your Bible, interestingly, when Hamor here says that the soul of his son longs for your daughter, the word your is in the plural. And it could well be, in fact, I think it's likely that Hamor recognizes that it's really Jacob's sons who are in charge, not their dad. And he then follows up this specific request with a general invitation to dwell in peace and in prosperity with them in the land. He He says, look, you can marry our daughters and we'll marry yours. We'll live at peace with one another. You can trade in our land. You can get property. You can become rich and wealthy. You can enjoy living here in peace with us. That's the general invitation that he adds to the specific request. And we see also that Shechem speaks to Jacob and to Dinah's brothers. And essentially, what we see him saying is that he is willing to do absolutely anything in order to gain Dinah's hand in marriage. He says, look at verse 11, let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will, and I will give whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife. Notice there is no apology from Shechem. He doesn't seem to recognize the wickedness of what he's done, or he just doesn't want to admit to it. There's no apology, but the offer of a great bridal price may be his way of seeking to make some sort of amends, some sort of reparation for the crime that he has committed. Either way, it's clear, isn't it, that he is besotted with Dinah. I'll do anything for her, anything at all, so long as she becomes my wife. And it's at this point that Jacob's sons now spot their opportunity to gain revenge. We're told that they answer Shechem and Hamor deceitfully. They are a chip off the old block. As one writer says, they have learned well at their father's knee. Jacob was a great trickster, wasn't he? And so too are his sons. They come up with this ruse that there is no way that they could give their sister in marriage to Shechem unless he and all of the men of the city are first circumcised. That's the deal breaker. That's the deal breaker. If you refuse to be circumcised, then the marriage negotiations, they're off. They'll collapse. By the way, just notice here how Jacob's sons are using or misusing the sign of the covenant to achieve their deceitful purposes. I mean, they probably think that they're being very, very clever, and in a way they are. Their plan is that the body part used by Shechem in his violent passion will become the source of his own punishment. Some kind of poetic justice, you might say. But of course, the truth is that Jacob's sons are misusing, even abusing, the sign of the covenant, and therefore misusing, abusing the God of the covenant. They're using it to achieve their own deceitful purposes. That covenant sign was, amongst other things, meant to mark them off as being different from the nations. But here they are going to use it in a way that was utterly deceitful, just as the nations themselves would perhaps act. And this is, if nothing else, an extremely sad commentary on their spiritual state. Anyway, Shechem wasn't to know this, was he? Nor his father Hamor. In fact, he and his father probably couldn't believe their luck. I mean, they probably expected Jacob's sons to demand a much greater bridal price, a huge amount of money, perhaps, or maybe a large portion of land. After all, look at the way you've treated our sister. You've got to pay a big price. As it is, all they've got to do is get circumcised. And you can imagine them thinking to themselves, or perhaps going outside of the tent and talking amongst themselves, saying, sure, it's going to be painful for a few days, but the pain will soon wear off, and then they'll have what they want, we'll have what we want, and we won't be any worse off. I mean, what could be easier All we've got to do is observe a ritual to kind of keep them happy, one of their religious traditions. What could be easier? And so it's no wonder that the words of Dinah's brothers pleased Shechem and Hamor so very much. And so they go back to their city and they persuade the other men of the city that getting circumcised is, without question, a price well worth paying, given all that they're going to get in return. Look at verses 21 to 23. We're going to get their livestock, their property, all their beasts. We're going to trade with them. We're going to become richer. I mean, what they're effectively saying is, we've got a bargain here. We'd be stupid not to accept their offer. And so every male in the city is duly circumcised. But then what happens? Let's read verses 25 to 29. On the third day, when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure and killed all the males. They killed Hamor and his son Shechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because they had defiled their sister. They took their flocks and their herds, their donkeys and whatever was in the city and in the field, all their wealth, all their little ones and their wives, all that was in the houses they captured and plundered. When the men are at their sorest, unable to walk, let alone fight, Simeon and Levi attack them, and they kill them all. It's a complete bloodbath. It's a massacre. They ransack the city. They take all of their possessions, and they capture their wives and their children. It's a complete bloodbath. Simeon and Levi here exact a terrible and a wholly disproportionate revenge. There's no denying that Shechem was guilty of an outrageous crime, a crime that had to be punished. But I would venture to say that Hamor wasn't guilty, that is, nor were the rest of the men of the city, and certainly not their wives and their children. Simeon and Levi were absolutely right to feel angry that Dinah, their sister, had been raped. Absolutely right, but they were absolutely wrong to do what they did. In other words, they did not channel their righteous anger righteously. They did not channel their righteous anger righteously. In fact, you probably noticed that theirs was a highly selective morality, wasn't it? They were rightly outraged that Shechem had taken advantage of their sister, but isn't this exactly what they then did with the men and the women and the children and the animals of the city? And you know, this is a grave temptation that we all face. When we are confronted with evil, evil that is committed either against ourselves or against someone that we love and care about, our natural desire is to gain revenge. We want to make that person pay, and maybe make people associated with that person pay as well. We want to get our own back, and sometimes we pursue, and we might even inflict, wholly disproportionate punishment. Yes, we must seek and do justice. But we must seek and do justice justly. Jacob's sons Do not do that. Their response to the evil of Shechem was in many ways to do even more evil. Their response was one of merciless revenge. What about the response of Jacob, their father? Well, it's almost the polar opposite. His response is one of silence and selfishness. And the two go together. We read in verse 5 that Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter, Dinah, but his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. Jacob hears that his daughter has just been raped. But he doesn't say anything, far less do anything, until his sons come in from the field. It's almost as if he's waiting for them to take charge of the situation. As the head of his household, as the father of the nation, Jacob should have taken the lead in seeking justice for his daughter. But he doesn't. He's entirely passive. Why doesn't he take the lead? Well, I'm sure that fear plays a part. Remember, Jacob is a newcomer in the land. He's been away for a long time. He's outnumbered by the Hivites, by the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Perhaps he's afraid of how they would respond if he demanded some sort of retribution for Shechem's crime. After all, Shechem is not some kind of minor figure, is he? Remember, he is the prince in the land. Bringing charges against him would require at least a smidgen of courage, wouldn't it? And so perhaps it's best just to stay quiet. Don't want to cause too much offense. Don't want to make life too difficult for us here. I mean, let others take the lead if they want to, like my sons. I'm sure fear, cowardice, plays a big part in Jacob's non-response. It might also be the case, quite frankly, that Jacob just didn't love Dinah all that much. Whose daughter is she? She's Leah's daughter. And Jacob never intended to marry Leah. He didn't like her very much. He loved Rachel. He had eyes only for Rachel. Who knows, if Dinah had been Rachel's daughter, then perhaps Jacob would have acted quite differently. There may well be other reasons as well, but the bottom line is this, that Jacob displays a culpable lack of leadership. A culpable lack of leadership as the head of his house, as the father of the nation. His silence is sinful. It's sinful. It's not the silence of wisdom. We heard this morning that, as a general rule, it's good to stay quiet, not to speak too soon. But there are times when you should speak, and this was one such time. This is the silence of a coward. And isn't this a temptation that we all too easily fall into? I know I do. I think this is a real temptation, perhaps especially for us men. Abdicating our responsibility to lead our family, whether it be in the pursuit of justice or something else. Not saying anything when really we should speak out. Choosing to sit back passively because really we just want a rather quiet and easy and comfortable life. We don't want to make things too difficult. You know, I never cease to be amazed, struck, struck to the core by the list of those in Revelation chapter 21 who will end up burning in the lake of fire. It's got a list of all these sinners, these wicked people. And you know who's first on that list? It's not murderers. It's not the sexually immoral. It's not idolaters. No, the first on that list is the cowardly. The cowardly. Cowardice is a major sin. Jacob's silence is culpable, it's cowardly. But as we then hop to the end of the chapter, we see that he doesn't stay quiet forever. Now here at the end of the chapter, he speaks up after his sons have massacred the city, exacting their terrible and wholly disproportionate revenge. And what does Jacob say to them? He says, "You have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." Finally, Jacob is angry. Finally. But only because his own security and his own peace is now threatened. Notice how his anger is entirely me-centered. "You have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land. If they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed. It's all me, me, me. What about Dinah? When trouble was brought upon your daughter, when she was made to stink amongst the inhabitants of the land by being raped, when she was attacked, when she was virtually destroyed, where was your anger then, Jacob?" Jacob was completely unbothered about a dreadful crime committed against his own daughter. It would be unwise to kick up a fuss. Then I might get into trouble. By contrast, he's extremely bothered about the dreadful crime that his sons have committed, but only because it threatens his own peace and security. He did not hate his sons' sin so much as the negative effects their sin might well have on him. And again, brothers and sisters, do we not see so much of ourselves in Jacob's response? Saying absolutely zilch in the face of evil until it threatens to make our lives harder, more uncomfortable in some way. Are we not guilty of not hating evil because it's evil, but hating it because of its potentially damaging effects on us? Such a response is inherently selfish. It's all me, me, me. And so we see that neither the response of Jacob nor of his sons to Shechem's evil deed is right. Neither response is right. And so often our response to evil mirrors theirs. Veering between, on the one hand, merciless revenge, and on the other, culpable silence. So is there a right response to evil? Is there a response that treats the evil of sin with appropriate seriousness and yet still reaches out in mercy to the sinner? Can there be justice for the evil that has been done against us that still provides forgiveness for the evil that we have done to others? And the answer, thank God, is yes. And where do we find that answer? We find it at the cross of Christ. Because at the cross of Christ, the evil of sin, the evil of rape, the evil of pillage, the evil of murder and of cowardice and of selfishness and of all the rest, the evil of sin was treated with the utmost seriousness as God himself, in the person of his Son, bore the weight of hell to pay for it. Justice was done at the cross. And so too was mercy. Because Jesus bore the evil of our sin, of your sin. Those who trust in him and in his sacrifice never will bear their sin. Instead of the people dying for the sins of the prince, as happened at Shechem, the King of Kings has died for the sins of his people. Perhaps you have been grievously sinned against, like Dinah. I don't know, but maybe there are some of you who have been cruelly violated, as Dinah was. The cross of Christ tells you that there is justice. There is justice for every sin. Or perhaps you have sinned grievously, like Shechem, or like Jacob's sons, or like Jacob himself. The cross of Christ tells you that there is mercy, mercy for every sin. A pandemic of evil rages in this world. An evil that's far greater than the virus. A pandemic of evil that is, in a way, Genesis 34 writ large. And actually, a pandemic of evil rages in our hearts. And in this pandemic, we cry out for justice. And we cry out for mercy and we say, is there an answer to this pandemic of evil? Is there a cure? And God says, yes, there is. Just look at the cross of my Son. He is the cure. He is the response to all the evil in this world and in your heart. Because at his cross, perfect justice and perfect mercy is carried out. Amen.